Hey everybody, it's episode 3 of Dear Textiles, and I'm Betsy Greer, and I'll be speaking with Tao Fung, a fashion designer, consultant, and entrepreneur who runs Textile Impact Retreats with her business, Textile Seekers. And in this interview, we talk about what led Tao to start running Textile Impact Retreats in Vietnam, what the 8-day trips entail, what sustainability in textiles looks like, and more. To find out more about Tao and Textile Seekers and find related links and also to sign up for our mailing list to be notified for future podcast episodes, check out deartextiles.com. Thanks. All right. So thanks for being here and for agreeing to talk to me about what you do and who you are and what you're up to. So if you could introduce yourself and your work and say a little bit about you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for the opportunity. I've been actually really looking forward to actually chatting with you. And so I'm here in, the sun's come out. I'm based in Barcelona, originally from Australia, from Melbourne. I have heritage roots from Vietnam, and I guess I work in design. I'm a creative. I grew up surrounded by fabric and textiles. My mother was a seamstress, and I remember, you know, sitting for hours in my mum's studio while she sewed, and I would just take the scraps, the offcuts, and play around with them, making little garments for my dolls. And I'll sit there and I'll be looking at the machines, and I just remember the smell of the oils of the machines as well. So definitely grew up in that environment, and then I kind of studied, and I really didn't think I could make a real career out of being a fashion designer. So I didn't really understand what it was to be a fashion designer. But I kind of went through the whole kind of process. It was really natural and organic. I kind of just fell into it. And before I knew it, I had started my first job and started pattern making, started sewing, started really, like, that first job that I took on literally threw me in the deep ends, where I was able to design and also articulate and create patterns and really engineer what I wanted to, what I had on paper into something wearable. So that was a really good experience for me as a designer, to actually understand that whole cycle. And it's led me literally to live in 7 different cities around the world, in the UK, in the US, Singapore, Hong Kong. And I'm now here in Barcelona, and I've moved around the globe specifically, you know, to move towards another, like a job, a position, in a creative as a creative in a company. So Textile Seekers, I mean, I don't know if I'm moving too fast into it, but so after working for almost 20 years in the industry, a few years ago, I took a holiday and flew back to Vietnam. I had been back to Vietnam a few times already, but this time I was traveling to the north in a region called Sapa, which is known for its picturesque rice fields. So when you see those images in the tour brochures or online, that's Sapa. So it's on the border, very close to the border of China. And so I was there and connected with a tribe woman from the Red Sao, and she spoke fluent English. She had a store, a little boutique store in the big market, where she had vintage and antiques from different other tribes, and she was selling them. And She taught embroidery, and so she literally really inspired me to delve really deeper into the textiles in relation to the different unique tribes of the country. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying to her that I will be coming back. And I think she kind of was like, oh, that's what all the tourists say. Mm-hmm. But I did. A year on, I had pretty much decided that I didn't want to stay in the corporate world in fashion. And I think it was just really the first kind of, that trip was more or less planting a seed of what was to kind of evolve. Mm-hmm. And so the second time I came back, I had been in touch with an NGO that's based out there. They're from the States, but they've got two safe homes out in Vietnam, one of which is in the border, close to the border of China. And, you know, on a lot of the travels that I had done in terms of being in Vietnam, visiting different unique tribes, I connected with a lot of the women. And during these conversations, I learned that a lot of the girls within these tribal communities were trafficked, to the outside, to China, to wherever. And I just kind of envisioned, I guess, this circular, I guess, economy, this fashion economy that we're kind of in, where I was working for a corporate company. Like, I think I was like a part of that, and I didn't want to be part of that cycle. I definitely knew that I had a responsibility after being, you know, seeing one-on-one with the girls who were survivors from being trafficked. I just knew that things had to change. So I decided that with the experience and the knowledge I had in textiles, my cultural heritage, the connection I had with textiles myself, that's kind of how Textile Seekers it kind of came about. I had no idea what I was getting into in terms of bringing together groups of women from the globe on like a retreat. Right. And, you know, that comes with a bunch of other things that I definitely wasn't aware of, that I'm not only holding a place for the women who come on my trips, who sign up for my trips, you know, they're not just getting to see firsthand what these women do and how they really just kind of just really, really work with nature, you know, and it kind of also explores the concept of what is slow fashion, what is sustainability, and also slow travel, and then also kind of that connection back with the NGO and the experience I had with the survivors was, if I was to show from one side travelers a little bit of what sustainability and fashion and slow travel and slow fashion was, and then the flip side, it was working directly with these tribal Indigenous communities, and then possibly showing the generations, you know, the children, the girls, that there was a reason for them to stay and not be susceptible to traffickers online that, you know, are trying to kind of coerce them into bigger and better things in the big city, which a lot of them are kind of poached through that white means. So it kind of just resonated with me, and I just felt if I was able to change one person's perspective, maybe one girl's life. I know it sounds really cliche, but I knew that was something that I definitely wanted to kind of take up as a challenge. And so I left the corporate world, you know, the comforts, as they say, the security of the corporate world, something that I was definitely afraid to do. There was definitely a fear of stepping away from security of income, of knowing that I, you know, I can go on my holidays every few months and like just having that lifestyle, and then almost going back to the roots and realizing for myself that I didn't really need so much to, I didn't need all the other bits and pieces that I've accumulated, and I really just needed my sense of, I guess, sense of well-being. And so yeah, I definitely took a you know, it was a few years, like there was a probably 2-3 years in that whole evolution where and that journey where it then brought me to Textile Seekers. So
I think that you mentioned about like if you change one person's life, I think that was something that used to be said a lot more before the internet, you know, and then all of a sudden it becomes this like, then you have to be viral. And I think sometimes we forget what it means to change the trajectory, especially because we all can think of times in our own life where maybe one person did something or said something or whatever that changed everything. And so we forget that. That's a lot of, of things that you think of, but I mean, that's exciting. I mean, so how many different, I mean, are you working with that one group in particular?
The first retreat was in November of 2019. Mm-hmm. That, again, I kind of, I don't know, I guess it's just me. I kind of, I try to plan as much as possible, and I try to figure out some sort of idea of how a journey would look, or and then I kind of just throw myself in it. And I speak Vietnamese, but I'm not fluent, and my parents would laugh to see me speak Vietnamese, but I speak Vietnamese to my parents just broken Vietnamese. But one of the main things I wanted to do was to connect with the women's directly. So there wasn't any third party. I wasn't going to pay, you know, an agent or anyone in Vietnam to collaborate with. So it just meant connecting with the right people. And everyone has a mobile phone, as much as like I would visit these villages and, you know, they may not own a fridge, but everyone has a mobile phone. And that was the way I connected with the women. And they were really open of sharing and introducing me to different other tribes. There was no kind of, you know, if you're going to work with this tribe, you're only allowed to stick with one tribe. They were just like, hey, we'll show you a different tribe if you're interested in to actually learn and to see what another tribe's skills are or what they specialize in. So I now work with actually 3 different tribes very closely. Like I said, one speaks English, so it's been super fortunate for me that she can communicate with English. And then the other two, I mean, Google Translator, and also a lot of voice messages. And if I'm there speaking to them face to face, of course it's much easier to get the words out in Vietnamese. So I kind of arrived 2 days before the travelers arrive into Vietnam, and I find that 2 days just speaking to, you know, the restaurateurs or just on the street speaking and communicating in Vietnamese, it kind of all kind of comes back. So that happened, like that was in November, and I had a group of 10 women who joined the inaugural retreat. And it was really, really, it was interesting because it was either going to be something that I was going to definitely pursue, or it would have been something that I'll be like, no, it's not for me, I don't think I can do this. So during that 8 days that I had with the women, definitely there was a moment in those 8 days that I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. What am I like? I don't know if I want to do this. But that was just more on, I guess, on a personal journey that I was going through that, you know, I definitely knew that there were certain skills that I was able to understand that I had to like learn, or I had to, you know, better myself at. And then there was other things that I just gravitated towards. And I think the main thing that kept me going was working with the women, the different tribes. And, you know, you kind of get that aha moment where, you know, you're talking with them and they explain something. And then it's just that, oh my God moment where you're like, oh my God, you made that in 3 months. What? And I think those are the things that make the journey special. And I also set one of the, so over the 8 days with the women, we visit these different tribes, and there are workshops where the women get to directly, you know, get their hands dirty, so to speak. So there's natural dyeing, there is foraging for medicinal herbs, there is batik, there is indigo dyeing. So, you know, you get to see the whole entire process where, for example, how the indigo is grown, how it's then processed, fermented, and then how it actually gets dyed and used up. So I do feel, and then, you know, I do see that the travelers who are coming on these retreats really start to understand what it means to be sustainable. You know, that these women, they make their own clothes, but they only make two sets a year, if anything. And they wear it until it's no longer wearable, but they will say, for example, save an embroidered panel that took them months to do, and they would then patch it on top of the new kind of set of clothing that they would make. And a lot of them also then pass it down to their kids as well, their children. So yeah, definitely. I love the moments where I had the quiet time. So allowing the travelers time to their own, like to have their own space. And then also that was when I would then go kind of on my little expeditions. And so I would jump in a car, like the last time I went was in February, jumped in the car with a driver, and there was a particular tribe that I was really keen on meeting up with. And they wore these beautiful crowns on the head that reminded me of like peacocks. And driving up the mountain, and like literally we're on a very narrow road, but you know, like a van. And I just remember looking down thinking, oh my God, we're going to crash. And the first thing I thought was, I'm just never going to see the tribes, am I?
Like, right.
I'm never going to get to see them.
This is it.
Yeah. So those were, I think that's what definitely fuels me, was seeing the different unique tribes and then really, really understanding what it is that they actually do in terms of how they're keeping their craft alive.
Yeah, I mean, how are they? I mean, are they, because I'm assuming that like everybody makes things, and so it becomes this thing, like everybody can't sell their things for what it's worth necessarily.
No, because there's
so much competition.
Exactly.
So how
exactly.
do they keep their skills? I mean, how, you know, I mean, I guess like how does that work for them to be sustainable for them financially?
Yeah. I mean, definitely it's a dying trade. And I think even like I was sitting with a grandmother and she's teaching me how to weave cotton on a loom. And the little kids were like sitting around watching me and laughing, because obviously I thought I was going to like pick it up really quickly, and I didn't. And I was like saying to the kids, oh, do you want to learn this? Do you know how to do this? And they just all were like, no, we don't know how to do this. And, you know, the woman was like, oh, they don't want to do this. They want to get a job in the city. And then the parents are also encouraging that because they know how difficult this job is. They're like, we, you know, to spend hours weaving a piece of fabric to then be sold for X amount of money. And then, you know, right along the border, like into China, they are mass producing it and selling it for less. So, you know, the competition's really hard, but I know that there is also like a genuine, they're proud, you know, they're proud of their culture, their heritage, and of their textiles. So I know there definitely will be a continuation, but not in the same numbers as it was. So, you know, I guess people like myself, and there's many other people out there that are, I guess, encouraging these type of communities to continue that tribe and to continue those heritage skill, like craft skills, and you know, support and preserve. I think that's one of the main ethos that, you know, I'm trying to stand by as well, was to support that. Because yeah, it is a lot easier, I guess, to buy something that's mass produced. And I think also it's about the consumer as well, to understand how long it takes to make a certain piece of garment, to then understand why it costs a certain amount of money. So I've kind of moved, you know, just with COVID, my last retreat was in February, came back here in March, and then COVID happened. So I kind of just took that as a sign that I just needed another like break, and just to kind of reevaluate my kind of strategy. Because when I came back in February, I had all these plans set up. I was going to launch a artist retreat. I had, you know, the journal in my mind as well, and launching that. And so, yeah, definitely re-strategizing. And I kind of, for a while, you know, kind of refrained from designing. I guess there was just a lot of baggage from, you know, my corporate days designing. So I was like, I don't want to design. And then I realized that I could actually really use that and support other brands that do want to transition into sustainability and into textile crafts.
There's a lot of interest in that. And I would assume also, there's interest in sustainability, that you could kind of meld that kind of together. I know that when I worked in kind of the labor industry that was looking at apparel factories, that there was maybe a few brands that we were working with that were interested in sustainability. And how they were treating subcontractors and stuff, and all that kind of stuff. So, that's an interesting.
Thing,
I guess. And then you have your beautiful journal. So how is that?
One of the things that came out from the February retreat was I had Liz, who's the creative director and founder of Lot of Stars magazine, on the retreat. And I remember having this discussion with her, like, oh, I'm just going to put like a little booklet together to give to my travelers. And, you know, also it'll be nice for them to keep a journal on the days that they go out, and maybe they might be inspired. So it kind of really started off as a very small booklet. It's now, it now kind of like just grew and grew into an actual book. It's over 182 pages. We've had a lot of the previous travelers contribute, whether it was a photo submission, whether it was writing some content. There's even been one of the renowned photographers who's based in Vietnam actually contributing to the magazine, the book as well, the journal. So it's been like 8 months or so, you know, during COVID, which has obviously allowed me to do that because of COVID, that I definitely kind of plowed on, even though we had many, many hiccups along the way. At one point, the graphic designer had lost his files, like something, his
No.
computer crashed. I just remember waking up and receiving an email, and he was like, "I think I lost everything." I was like, "What? No!" But he managed to, I don't know how, but he retrieved his files. But we kind of plowed on, and I'm really thankful that I did, because that was also another learning curve, an industry that I kind of did, like, I have no experience in.
So where are you going now? Like, now it's, I mean, like, because you dropped like at the end of last year, and it's now almost the middle of the next year.
Yeah, I know,
So
crazy.
what?
I'm fingers crossed that within the next few months, we're able to travel. I don't know how likely that would be, but I'm hoping by the end of the year I would be able to kind of go home to visit, family in Australia, but along the
Sure.
way, do a third retreat for textile seekers. So that would be the ideal scenario. And to also reconnect with everyone there. I think that would be a real, kind of blessing if that kind of happens before the end of the year. The journal, I have reached the minimums that I had expected to reach, or I had planned to reach before it goes into print. So in the next few weeks, it would be ensuring that anyone who had pre-ordered gets their journal shipped out. And also there'll be a bit more leeway in terms of, like, those who want to buy the journal, whether it's online, digital, or it could be like a hard copy. And then I've just started reaching out to some really great book retailers,
Oh, great.
newsstands around the world, to see if they would stock the journal. And so we I re I just got a yes, from a company based out in New York and California. So that's really promising to get it out there and to share that with the world. And I mean, there's only a limited run. I'm only planning on printing a small limited run of the journal and having that out. I don't envision doing this again for another, probably for another year.
Right.
And I mean, it's pretty much how I, it's even just with Textile Seekers itself, is it's I explain to some friends where I say, you get into something that you don't know about, and that's how you kind of learn, and I guess it was like the naivety of getting into tourism, or getting into creating a journal, a book, and not knowing what possibly could happen, but then just, finding solutions and overcoming those challenges each, bit by bit. But yeah, that's kind of the plan. And also, I have already collaborated with some brands, so those collaborations will be coming out hopefully soon. I mean, it's been in work now since last year, but because also the tribes that I connect with, the borders were closed in Vietnam as well, and within the regions. So it wasn't until like 2 weeks ago that one of the women who had helped with some of the samples for a brand here in Spain, she was able to actually move across the border into Hanoi, to actually drop off a parcel to be to be like sent out and shipped out to me in Spain. So I feel like things are opening up, things are moving, and I would definitely love to connect with other brands and also build up a part of their collection as as almost like a tribute to kind of also reinforce what I had been speaking about, that you know, we need to preserve these traditions. We need to uphold them into a really, like, you know, they should be seen as couture. They should be seen as high end. Mm-hmm. And there is a price to pay for that. And so it's this kind of like concept of re-educating also consumers as well as brands, as well as CEOs, and to kind of get them on board with what this means, as opposed to taking it for granted, I think. So that would be, you know, life, I mean, ongoing, I'm sure. And but, you know, I'm here for the long run. So yeah.
Yeah, and you have all these amazing skills that, you know, in design and connections, and you've now learned about putting together a book. And
yeah. Oh my god. Yeah. So,
but I think
it won't, you know, another year. Maybe another year I'll think about doing it again.
But I think hopefully everybody that you've worked with in Vietnam has been able to stay safe during
the pandemic. Yeah. Given. Mm-hmm. So hopefully. Yeah, everyone's been safe. I touch base with the women that I work with, if not weekly, it's like once every few weeks, sending out WhatsApp messages, voice messages. I just connected with the one woman who has a studio in Hanoi. She's from one of the tribes outside of Hanoi, but married a Hanoian boy, like a man, and obviously uprooted from her village. And I kind of feel that these women that I'm connecting with are amazing warriors of they are the ones that are pushing forth the next generation of maintaining and preserving these ancient skills, you know. So her studio is set up like a proper atelier with a loom, and she dyes everything in her like bathroom. And you know, she weaves silk scarves and she sells them into the galleries in Hanoi. So I feel like anything's possible, you know. I think it's just a matter of what the values are behind everything. So I'm super excited to reconnect back up with them. I've actually asked for a few of the scarf pieces to be sent to me here in Barcelona. She was sending through a picture of this stripe fabric, and I was like, wow, those colors are amazing. And where is this from? Like, who made it? And she was like, oh, my mother made it. I was like, oh my god, do you think I can have that? Like, right. So I'll be getting that in the next few weeks, and I'll just be happy opening up the parcel and having a look at those beautiful, beautiful pieces of artwork that she's hand woven. So, yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to traveling again when the world.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, can't wait to travel again. I think I'm just ready to kind of like that kind of excitement of like packing your suitcase and you know, but I obviously will be much more conscious of the things that I'm packing or how I'm traveling, definitely. Travel light is best, so I will be doing that.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for talking to me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All the great stuff that you have going on, it's exciting.
Yeah, so, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for listening. I really enjoyed my conversation with Tao Fung and hope you did too. As I noted earlier, to find out about Tao and Textile Seekers and to find related links to her journal and to her website and Instagram, and also to sign up for our mailing list to be notified for future podcast episodes, check out deartextiles.com. If you liked this episode and could rate it and subscribe, that would be amazing and really helps me out because this is a new venture and I would love it if you shared your thoughts and kept listening. So thanks for being here and see you next time.